I'm Gab, he's Jules. Cloudy skies over West London, probably to do with the Chelsea defeat. But guess what? We're going to get into that later. We're going to get into the starts of the Bundesliga, the start of Serie A. We're going to get into all that later because there's one place to start. It is the Women's World Cup final. Yeah. We have new champions of the world.
We do indeed, Spain. Well done to them.
A por ellas.
Yes, amazing win. Only their third participation to show where they went from, where they started and where they are now. Incredible. I think they deserved it against England in that final. The way they play, we mentioned it in the last show on Thursday. What makes them so good, really, despite the fracture between the head coach and most of that squad, it's an incredible achievement, really. And as we said, only the second country after Germany to win both the men and the women's World Cup.
Now, when you break this down into sort of the game into events, they beat England 1-0. They had a penalty saved by Mary Earps, the England goalkeeper. England and Spain both hitting the woodwork. And maybe, England, had they scored first, some people think we might have seen a different game. Would we have seen a different game, do you think?
I think that Spain were the better side in that final. I think England tactically made some mistakes at the start of the game in their formation, but also at halftime. I don't know how Ella Toon, I've got nothing against Ella Toon, but how can she play 87 minutes in a final like that, hardly touching the ball? For me, England played with 10 men for most of it. They were out.
Ten women, even.
In midfield, there was no way Walsh and Steinway could cope with the Spanish midfield, just the two of them. So I think there was a lot of mistake made.
You say mistakes. You're talking about Serena Wiegmann playing a back three,
the
opting to go and press high.
Yeah.
She tried to adjust it at halftime, moving to more of a 4-3-3 formation.
But she took Russo off as well, which was a completely stupid thing to do.
Taking the Italian girl off. Exactly. I knew that. It's got to be wrong.
Exactly.
What I thought was interesting, and then we'll go back to Spain, is in a game like this, this is a broader story, right? When we talk about great players and great games, experienced players, there's an expectation that, they're going to produce on the big stage and the big events.
Yeah.
And you're always left a little bit kind of nonplussed when actually you have great players making mistakes.
Yeah.
I'm not going to suggest that Lucy Bronze, who England's probably the most experienced, the player you least expect to make a mistake. Okay, you're talking about a fullback or a right back. So, they're not going to necessarily shine, but steady, dependable. For me, I thought she had a really, really poor game. It can happen sometimes. She's been great so many times in the past. We see this in the men's game too, right?
Mm.
Players are fully fit and it just doesn't come through. I'm still kind of astounded by that. And I'm referring, obviously, the most obvious one is when she's going on one of her driving runs. She runs right towards the center circle where there's three Spanish players waiting for her. It vacates the space at right back. There isn't the adjustment, whatever. But we see this happen. It's weird. And I still don't understand if it's nerves, if it's just randomness, what it is.
But yeah,
because these are your leaders.
I know, but anybody makes mistakes. You can still make a mistake.
And they can happen at any time.
Yeah, but I think the most important, and I'm a bit torn for the bronze, for the gold, because, okay, she loses the ball on the halfway line. There's still a long way between the halfway line and Olga scoring that goal the way she did. And there
was
no
cover. It
was
a great finish, by the way.
Yeah, great finish and great pass by Calente. Yes, no problem. But nobody covers bronze. It's Alicia Russo, who is running back from the halfway line, trying to chase Olga. That's not her job either. So, okay, bronze should not have lost the ball. Maybe should not have signed that run, etc. We can go over that. But behind her, once she's lost the ball, there's too many mistakes made by the whole England team, not just Lucy Bronze, to get to that goal they conceded. So, I don't know. I did think the leaders of England didn't show up enough, really, apart from maybe Earps, because she saved that pen. And she made a couple of other really good saves.
Lauren Hemp was okay.
Yeah, maybe. I just think that collectively and individually, and maybe it was because it was a World Cup final and... I don't know.
Or maybe they hadn't played well throughout the tournament.
Exactly. They were very underwhelming.
We're going to get into more later. Regarding Spain, you talked about how far they've come in these 10 years. There's no question that these players have to come from somewhere. So it feels to me like you turn on the faucet, you give young girls the opportunity to play. They maybe try to emulate what the style of play in Spain, which is generally more technical than, mm-hmm. than in other countries in Europe. And this is the result. You give people the opportunity, they can produce great things. And I think that is the encouraging message. And if you coach them in the right way, obviously the backstory to this, you touched upon it, is a coach, Vilda, the relationship with the team. We don't need to go into detail. I think everybody and their mom now knows about what happened. Yeah. The 15 players and the identical email and blah, blah, blah. Fact of the matter is, three important players who probably would have started, at least certainly two of the three, Mapileon and the
Sandro Panos.
Yeah.
And,
you know, weren't there.
Yeah.
At this World Cup. And every, you know, we talk about everybody has injuries and US had injuries and England had injuries. And the fact of the matter is these players weren't injured. They were home. Alexis Putellas, who, you know, arguably I think alongside with Jenny going a year ago, you would have said she and Jenny are Spain's two most important players, maybe Alexia even ahead of her, right?
I mean, more put there, Jenny was out of that squad. Vilda kicked her out, you know, and she went to play in Mexico. It was a long shot for her to shine so much in this World Cup, I think.
And Alexia coming in with the injury. So I guess what I'm saying is there's been so much turmoil, so many big players missing. And yet it's like those clown cars, right? The, well, you know, next man up or next woman up in this situation, person comes in, and they're just as good as the person that they replaced.
I mean, they have irreplaceable players, of course, like Aitana Bonmatí, who's the player of the tournament, who's probably going to win the Ballon d'Or now. Those kind of guys, I think even Paredes. But then the depth in their squad, because the program that they put together 10 years ago, let's say roughly, has been just so successful. They are currently the World Cup holders, the under-20 World Cup holders, the under-17 World Cup holders. So you know that for the next 10 years, not all of those girls are going to make it to the top and be amazing. But you know the depth is there. If already they are the best team in the under-17, under-19, under-20, and not even for the women A team. So it's incredible what they've done. Let's not forget, the culture of women's football in England, like in the US, for example, or even like Japan, is far, or in Germany, far, far bigger than the one they have in Spain. Real Madrid didn't have a club until really recently.
And they bought another club
to create theirs. So we can't even compare women's football in England, which has years and years of being there. I'm not saying they've always been successful and great, but they've been there for a long time compared to Spain.
I feel like they've also had a lot more money going into it well, because, you know, women's, you know, when we talk about the role that Premier League clubs have played in developing the women's game here, is they lose money on the women's team, but they say, we don't lose it. It's a marketing expense for us, right? And so you get these women, they come in, they have access to all these facilities and whatever else, they can do it at a high level. In Spain, obviously Barcelona, the exception in this, Real Madrid, as you said, coming along later, Atletis has a good tradition. But again, you just don't have the volume of teams, you know, playing or offering high-level facilities, going out there. I think this shows what can happen very, very quickly. I've long made the point that women's football is a rich country's game. And certainly at the last World Cup it was.
Yeah.
But we can also see how quickly it can change. I think we've seen that throughout this tournament. Going back to Vilda, there's no question, he, especially in the Anglo press, he's like the villain of this piece. Right? Yeah. And probably what I really struggle... What I really, really struggle here is that we don't have any detail because they've decided during the tournament, it's understandable during the tournament, okay, nobody's going to talk about it. Vilda doesn't talk about it. The players, both the ones, you know, some of whom, as you said, were the ones who quit the national team, who sent that email and then agreed to come back under whatever terms. They haven't spoken about it. The three players who stayed home haven't spoken about it.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel we're in this situation where we just don't know. All we have is this initial information without any detail or any examples where these women ask for the removal of their national team coach, citing mental health, psychological. But there are no examples. No examples even leak out into the media except for that thing about the bed checks, which, you know, in and of itself... I'm not saying these are adults, so it shouldn't be happening, but we also haven't heard the response from the Federation saying it's true, saying it's not true.
No,
we don't know, right? And they continue with Vilda, and they end up winning the World Cup. So at the very least, there is a story here of how you can put your differences aside and succeed.
Yeah.
I wonder, though, going forward, there has to be some closure here. The ugliness about Vilda, or part of it, is Vilda's father is in charge of the women's game overall in Spain. Rubiales, the head of the Spanish FA, who former union man, he said, look, you know, in turning down their request when they all kind of quit the national team, he said, you don't get to choose the coach. Right?
Yeah, he's also a best friend with the Vilda family.
And he's close to the Vilda family, which might also explain why Vilda Sr. has that role at the Spanish FA. Do we need closure, or will they just... I mean, one day people are going to talk, we're going to talk about what happened, right?
I just don't know how long it's sustainable. So could they go and win the Olympics next summer in Paris? Maybe they can. How long can you... How many tournaments can you have where clearly there's a big issue between your head coach and most of the squad? I mean, the fact that at the end, they won it and it took a very long time for some of the girls, not even all of them, to go and kind of celebrate it with Vilda, with their own head coach, I think shows the fact. But again, you can win and you're not all friends. You can win and not everybody likes their manager. It's the same in every job. Not everybody likes the guy who's in charge. I can understand it. I just wonder how often can you do it? Can you go and again do it next year? Can you do it again doing the next Euros and the next World Cup? I'm not so sure, but credit to him and them. He said after the final it was worth all that suffering because we won it. I just don't know.
I think in all these things you have to have some closure. And I think if Vilda's not willing to talk, if the women aren't willing to talk, the best thing would be at this stage, you've won the World Cup. I know the Olympics are coming up, whatever. Walk away. Right? If you're Vilda, walk away. There are other jobs in football now.
Yeah.
This would be the time to do it because, you know.
But let's not forget.
I've never seen anything like this. Where again, other than the Bedcheck story, which, by the way, for those who don't know, the Bedcheck story was essentially, supposedly, he asked the players, don't lock the door to your room until bedtime.
Yeah. So that. Now, which is weird.
Which is definitely weird, if true. I can tell you right now that, you know, if our boss at ESPN said, oh, Gab, Jules, you guys are at the World Cup, don't lock your door until bedtime, I'd be like, okay, fine, yeah. And then I'd have somebody go and break his kneecaps, right? So, like, I don't get that. But you have to move on from this somehow, or you have to find out what happened. I think the best way at this stage, if nobody's going to talk, I think for me, it would be Vilda moving on.
I think so too. I think you've reached the top now. Maybe he thinks there's more he can achieve from that team, with that team, and go again. I think, again, he will put himself under a lot of pressure because despite winning the World Cup, those issues will still be there. We still talk about them going into the Olympics and everything. But I mean, I don't know him. I think one of the grief from the players was that he was not good enough and not competent enough, and a lot of the training sessions. I mean, let's not forget, before this World Cup, they had been terrible under him in big tournaments.
Right.
So I don't know if he's improved as a coach. I don't know. But nine out of the 11 starters are Barcelona players. They play like Barcelona.
Could it have been, are you suggesting it's like the old Sampdoria under Vujadin Boskov, where like the players run it?
Clearly. It's, I mean, it looks like that. And again, we don't know exactly what happened, but it looked like, I'm not saying any coach would have gone and won it. However, you have such a good, strong core of that team, from the most successful team in the women's game at club level, that is a big help. That's all I'm saying.
So many questions here. I hope we get more answers, because I think it's a fascinating story. You had issue, not just you, me too, with the behavior of Luis Rubiales, the head of the Spanish FA.
I mean, very controversial character. We've said many times before the kind of guy that he is. But for him to clearly force Jenny into a kiss as they were getting their medals, and, you know, grabbing her face and kissing her on the lips.
A kiss on the lips. It's not like a friend kiss.
No. This is like...
It's weird. And it's not like he was kissing everybody on the lips, right?
Yeah, and she's not his wife or his girlfriend or his partner or anything. They're not together. So you force kiss someone like in a ceremony like that in front of the whole world, but even in private would have been completely wrong, but which is for me harassment. Like, you know, in Spain, they were, the feminists and the people in the government, the women's government, went really, really far into like sexual assault and all of that, because Jenny clearly, and she said it after in the dressing room, she didn't want it. She didn't want a kiss, and he forced her, and there was nothing she could do. But then on the final whistle, he grabs his genitals to celebrate. I mean, I was like, come on.
Yeah. The kiss was very uncomfortable. It really felt like, you know, this isn't, was it Laurent Blanc and Fabien Barthez?
Kissing on the...
Yeah, this is not like head. That. Let's be very, very clear.
Definitely not.
I don't think it was an erotic thing. It was just like a bigger, stronger man, like that crossing a boundary. I think he needs to think, I think he needs to apologize.
Yeah.
Very clearly. And say, look, you know, these are professional athletes. These are adults. You wouldn't do that. I mean, unless this is ordinary for him, and when Spain win the men's World Cup, or the men's Euros next summer, is he going to go and kiss Gavi on the lips? I don't know. If this is how you do it with everybody, fine. But no, I thought that was clearly crossing a boundary. One thing where I know we're not supposed to compare the men's game and the women's game, I did get the sense that, I drop in on the women's game for big events. I'm by no means an expert. But I kind of felt that there was a bit of an arc in the women's game. So there were moments going back 15 years ago when the women's game, when it was more physical and less technical, there were some dirty, you would see some dirty situations going on,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I remember there's a Colombian player punching Abby Wambach, for example. Remember Abby Wambach breaking the England captain's nose. Like there was an edge, there was a nastiness to it, right? Then it went away. I think the game actually became probably better coached, more technically gifted players. But what we saw on the penalty with Lucy Bronze,
yeah,
this was some old school, you know, spit housery, as some people like to call it. Where
do you think
she's,
it was really to get into Jenny's head, or I think she was just arguing about the ball not being on the penalty spot.
But why would you ever do that?
I don't know.
Why? You do it for one reason. And it went on, and she's arguing with the players to the point that several of Jenny's teammates came up and said, please, get out of here, right?
Yeah.
Was this the frustration that was maybe in her head from the mistake she made earlier? Whatever. I'm surprised the referee didn't book her, because that's straight. We see this in the men's game a lot of the times, and, you know, we say, it's part of the game, but... Maybe it is part of the game. Maybe it is a competitive edge. And if you get into an opponent's head, you know, you'll do it, right?
I just wonder, I mean, if Jenny scores that pen in the 72nd it was, or 70th minute, whatever, the game is over. And I think the frustration from the England players, and you saw Kira Walsh with the handball, she knew straight away she handled the ball, that it was going to be given after VAR. And I think maybe just that frustration and the tension, like, got to Lucy Bronze, and she was just arguing, or maybe she was just trying to get into Jenny's head, and I guess it worked because Mary Herbst served the pen and England was still in the game for another 20 minutes. But
Mary Herbst's reaction, rather some industrial language after
which
saving
is a
the penalty.
Personality, whether you know, some will like it, some won't like it, the swearing, the, you know, pulling the tongue out, all that kind of stuff. And she was very good in that final. But I just think, for what was an amazing World Cup, really, I thought so. To cover or to
watch. Wasn't better than France 2019, though, right?
I think it was.
Wasn't the food better, the scenery better in France?
Oh, you mean like that?
I'm kidding.
It was
yours is French, in case you haven't noticed.
Yeah, in case you haven't noticed. It was a final that I think, in a way, it could have been better, of course, more goals, etc., whatever you want. But it did justice to how good the whole tournament was, because there was drama, there was tension, there was some moment of really good football, there were chances, you mentioned, hit the post, hit the bar, blah, 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 great saves all around. And I thought, just to cap off what was a really good tournament, the first one with 32 countries, where we were not really sure, are they ready to make it to 32 or not? It was great. So well done to Spain and England. In the end, of course, Spain the happier, but yeah.
That was a really big statement. I think the football on the pitch, the spectacle is really good. Obviously, there's concerns because it's in Australia. The time difference makes it inconvenient for many other parts of the world. But we saw that people did tune in, people did watch, people did come back.
Yeah.
I was quite moved by some of these quotes from Sarai Barman, who's the head of the FIFA women's division, and she's from New Zealand, and she was talking about how when New Zealand scored the first ever goal in the first game, she says, you know, she has 13 nephews, you know, all men, and how they're all cheering wildly and hugging wildly when they scored. And they said, like, they didn't see a woman athlete. They just saw an athlete. They just saw the moment, right? And that, I think, is something special. I think the question of what is a legacy, what is it going to be like going forward, is obviously a very complex one. I go back to this. I don't know to what degree. I don't know who's the one driving it, right? Because FIFA's job is not to have the most financially successful World Cup. FIFA's job is to ensure that the game develops around the world.
Yeah.
Right? That is ultimately their mission statement. That's what we need to hold them to account to, right? Let's provide enough women access to the game so that people can play the game. And then other people look at it in purely commercial terms, right? Let's have a pro league. Let's get more sponsors involved. It's a balancing act. You need both the private and you need the public, FIFA, for lack of a better word, the public sector here. But I think it's right that people go and proponents, people who like women's football, push their own FAs, especially in the wealthier countries, to pick up the slack. And I'll be really curious to see what happens, for example, here in England. The women's league doesn't start until October.
Yeah.
You know, they play fewer games. They play what, like 24 odd games at that, right?
22, yeah.
Is it because it's not financially viable playing more games? In the US, they just started another professional league, right? So there's two professional leagues now, right? How viable are they?
Mm.
And does it matter that the professional game is viable, or should the model be like we have in rugby, like we have in cricket, where you have a certain number of professional players on central contracts, and maybe you have a wider base. Maybe you've got more women who are able to play because it's semi-professional, it's more regional, you know, while still preserving the elite. I think there's a lot of things to think about. And I hope people take this seriously, see the potential in it, and continue to build it that way.
Yeah, I mean, there's potential for really good legacy and to keep the improvement. I think FIFA and Gianni Infantino also need to show that they care, and Gianni Infantino not being at the World Cup the whole time. I'm not saying go to every single game like he did in Qatar, because it was not logistically possible. But still, he was absent almost as much as he was there. That Seferin didn't go to the final when you have two UEFA countries in the final is unacceptable. I know it's far, but Prince William should have gone. Rishi Sunak should have gone. I don't even understand that nobody representing England at that kind of level was there.
Wait, Prince William, the honorary head of the English FA?
Yeah. I'm sure he had better things to do. So he says on a Sunday, but that was unacceptable again. But apart from that, I think everything else and every component of this World Cup and the legacy of it is there to make it good. Certainly now, with the Olympics being just next year, we see those teams again.
You have that same momentum, yeah.
Yeah, the momentum can last for a season. And then you go again in Paris, the time will suit. So it should be good,
but
make the most of it.
And stop using money as the benchmark, or the men's game as the benchmark. This is something different.
Yeah.
It can follow its own path. It's already from day one much more global than the men's game was when it started out in 1870-odd, whatever. So,
and we have a Nations League coming up as well.
Absolutely.
To qualify for the Olympics, which would be very interesting.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Australia and New Zealand. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Tottenham Hotspur beat Manchester United 2-0 as the Ange Postecoglou. Hey, I did say enough Australia.
Yeah,
here he is again. Is. Bandwagon rolls on. No. Jules, were you impressed?
I am impressed in a way. I mean, I think it's going to be fun. That's for sure. The season is going to be a lot of fun. They will concede chances and goals, as we saw against United, who could have easily scored in the first half. They will create chances. They will score goals, even without Harry Kane. I'm not sure Richarlison is the answer up front, but they will score goals, they will create chances, they might get a bit of luck there for them, against them, I don't know. It will be fun. There's still a lot of work to be done, as that game showed. It's a great win. It's Ange's first home game in the Premier League. They win against United. It's a prestigious win. It was not perfect by far. It could have been very different too, but they got the win. They've got 4 points in two games, two not easy games, away at Brentford, home to United. So it's good for them. It's good because that brings confidence, momentum. The fans are happy and excited. There's still a lot of work to be done.
A lot of work to be done for Ten Hag too.
Wow. But I think Ange and Spurs, you knew it. Okay, new manager, no Harry Kane. So great. For United, wow.
Do we need to have a conversation about Lisandro Martinez? Did he send his like twin brother who has never played football before?
Yeah, we need to have a talk about Mason Mount. I mean, come on. Maybe this is not his best position. I understand. I agree. But come on. This is not enough. Marcus Rashford. Okay, where's Hoyland? When is he going to be ready? I mean, let's not even go into Bruno, Anthony, Garnacho. There's a lot of things that maybe we didn't expect to be worried about at this stage of the season. And sticking with United, Gab, are you surprised that Dean Henderson is still there after being linked with Nottingham Forest and Crystal Palace?
I am hugely surprised because Dean Henderson, we were all led to believe, you know, wanted to start. He's got England ambitions. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
Now, the Nottingham Forest ship, I'm assuming, has sailed because they signed Matt Turner. From United's perspective, again, they have a budget that they're working to this year, right? 120 yeah. million net spend. So we've got stories coming out, reports that they're now looking to pick up a midfielder. I think you still need another proper center forward, even if you can trick somebody into taking Martial away.
Yeah.
Maybe they're hoping to raise funds through the sale of Maguire.
Yeah.
That's a very, very slow burn, if it's a burn at all. Move Henderson. You'll get Maguire-type money for Henderson. He's easy to shift.
Easier than Maguire.
Probably. I don't know why this has been so difficult until now.
I know.
But it's important to get it done.
Yeah, definitely.
Hate to go there, Jules. But it's another game without a win for Paris Saint-Germain, held 1-1 by Toulouse.
Yeah.
And at halftime, they send on Ousmane Dembele and Kylian Mbappe. You're like, the cavalry. But that wasn't enough.
No, although it was better. It was better. I mean, it would have been really worrying if Ousmane Dembele and Kylian Mbappe had come on and the team would have been
still
not
bad.
Better. No, they were not bad in the first half. They just had a lot of control, a lot of the ball, and they just didn't create enough. You don't find Gonzalo
They're
Ramos.
They're so sterile. Why is Vitinha in the front three? What does Lee Kang-in do?
I know, but Lee Kang-in,
if Gonzalo Ramos doesn't have service, what can he do?
No, for sure. Obviously,
that midfield. What happened to Fabian?
Luis Enrique was never a Fabian fan. I mean, when he was at Spain head coach,
right.
It was not
He's obviously not a Verratti fan either, as we've established.
No, Verratti would go, as we see, we will talk about later. But at least when Kylian and Ousmane came on, obviously he was much better. I thought Mbappe was sharp, considering he hadn't played for 2 months a proper game. That was good, but they considered that late Hakimi penalty to drop the 2 points, and it would get better, but it's been a slow start.
You have to budget for at least one Hakimi bonehead play every two games,
I think.
He, for all he gives you at the other end. What did Mbappe say? Because some people said, he said, I'm staying here. Is that what he said? When he went and chatted the fans?
Yeah.
What, like until the window closes?
What he said to the club. That's why he's been reintegrated, because he said, I'm staying and not leaving for nothing. That was his words, not mine, because I know you're going to look at me and roll your eyes. He said to the club, I'm staying,
all right,
and I promise not to leave for nothing next summer. Well, that nothing, I'm not sure what that means, but...
Okay, exactly. All right, stay tuned.
Napoli began their title defense of Serie A with a win, 3-1 away win at Frosinone, the newly promoted, with Rudy Garcia on the bench. Gab, I bet you're dying to tell me who scored 2 goals out of the 3 for the Napolitans.
Who else? The best is yet to come! Victor Osimhen! It's like he never went away! He could have had a hat trick in this game. Easily. Absolutely devastating. Looks sharp. I think he has the right mask on, the one that gives him the superpowers.
Yeah.
Kajus responsible for the goal, but also looked all right.
He looked good.
Looks better than Dombele did anyway when he was there.
I hope he plays more than Dombele.
Yeah, you know, Napoli going a goal down, unflappable. Now it looks like Zielinski's staying as well. Yeah. He put in a decent shift, and now they're even excited because it looks like Gabri Vega's coming after all.
And Kvaratskhelia was not even there, so, you know.
Yeah, who needs Kvara? Take some more time off.
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Jules, we've been apart for so long, I got a hankering for some more quick hits. Manchester City beat Newcastle United 1-0 as Phil Foden shines. Jules, they did it without De Bruyne and without Bernardo Silva, who's unwell, apparently, just as he's signing a new contract. Are we so sure depth is a problem? And how about Akanji in the Stones role?
So Akanji in the Stones role is interesting. Remember we mentioned the... on Thursday in the last show, which is what Pep did at halftime against Sevilla in the Super Cup, and he worked pretty well. So I wasn't surprised. I think he makes a lot of sense in the sense that of all the defenders or the centre-back that can play there, so let's say Walker, Ruben Dias, the right-footed, Ruben Dias, Walker are the other two. He's the best one technically for me that can do it more than...
Presumably Gvardiol would be.
Yeah, but he's left-footed. So that would mean Rodri would have to change a little bit more the way he plays. So the Stones and Rodri, Rodri is more on the left-hand side.
Okay, but it's still a kind of side. I mean, Stones got a great right foot.
Still, but like, technically, I think he's sound. And I love Foden, especially after the difficulty that he had against Sevilla that we mentioned in the last show. It's great. I felt that Newcastle gave Foden far too much time on the ball, space on the ball. I didn't really understand that there was not a plan against Foden. And really, he should have had three assists, maybe four. Haaland should have scored. And that was very unlike Haaland to miss those chances. But I thought it was just an easy, controlled win from City.
Just context, just a reminder. This is a game where City were without, arguably, the three of their five most important players from last season. And another one of those five, Haaland, did not have his shooting boots on, right? Because those four plus Rodri, those were the five, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And still Newcastle flying and I'm just impressed.
Nah, it was impressive. Barcelona leave it late, but goals from Pedri and Ferran Torres give them a 2-0 win over Cadiz at the Montjuic Stadium. First time that they play, obviously, this year in the stadium. Gab, Lamine Yamal started his first game aged 16 and 38 days.
You know, my thoughts last year when he was 15, he was playing, I said, this is not necessary. This is stupid. And then I see him and like, my God, like this guy. First of all, he's like a man child, right?
Yeah, he's really strong.
Man. He's big and strong.
Yeah, yeah.
He looks so composed. He makes so many of the right decisions on the end. I don't know. Maybe he really is just a freak of nature. Like, you know, Johan Cruyff played when he was 14. Why can't this guy be playing at 16? Beyond that, I think Cadiz are really tough nut to crack. They sit deep and so on.
Yeah.
Barcelona had some issues defensively, understandable, given the people who are out.
Yeah.
But, you know, progress, forward momentum, and yeah, you get Pedri back to his best.
Yeah, that's special. That's good.
Chelsea signed Romeo Lavia, but lose away to West Ham 3-1 as Moises Caicedo comes on and has a rather rough debut. Jose, it's only two games. Are you seeing progress under Mauricio Pochettino?
I thought there were positives against Gab from that game, like after the Liverpool game. I know it's only 1.92 games, and it's not ideal to start the season that way. But the first half against West Ham was good, I thought, with the ball. They had a lot of possession. They created a lot. They conceded a goal on set piece. Which
they missed a penalty.
They missed a penalty. They conceded a goal on set pieces, which is something that should not happen too much, really, when you've got, you know, Thiago Silva and Colwell and Di Sassi in your team. And but it was poor defending from especially Chukwuemeka on that, and Gallagher, to be fair, on the Haggard header. However, the second half was very disappointing.
Yeah, first half, definite progress. Second half, I thought, terrible. Really, and again, bad. You said, oh, there's no striker to bring on, whatever. But it was so disjointed.
He was, completely.
Mudrik, man.
Yeah.
Work on that.
And speaking of West Ham, Gabby, Lucas Paqueta started the game, scored a late penalty and celebrated widely. It's got a lot going on.
I imagine City are going to come back in for him. I don't think that ship has sailed.
What if he's banned for 8 months?
They need somebody. So this investigation, so essentially what happened, it's called spot betting, where you bet on individual factors. I can't remember. Was it a booking that?
Yeah, yellow cards.
So it was actually, ironically, West Ham's own betting partners, Betway, who spotted a spike in people betting on yellow cards in the Rio de Janeiro area. This was a game back in March. He's somehow been implicated in this. I don't know. I'd love to know why, if this happened in March, we only find out now when he's about to potentially move to a different team. I don't know. Let's sit back and see what happens. I find the whole thing very suspicious, and I hope he's not just getting dragged
suspicion.
Into it.
Suspicious in which way?
It just seems stupid to me that Paqueta would agree to something like this. I just find this very, very implausible. Could it be a rumor that spreads? Paqueta's friend says, "Oh, look."
Yeah, but he did get yellow though.
Gets yellow in the game. You're a professional footballer. It happens.
Okay,
but I don't know.
Luis Enrique, the Brazilian winger from Betis, same thing on the same day.
It's a
strange coincidence if it's just a coincidence. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I wish there was more transparency, starting with the fact is if this happened in March, why do we find out now?
True.
Right?
That's
and
true.
Betway and others who monitor this have this information in real time.
True.
Liverpool rolled to a 3-1 victory over Bournemouth as the entire front three score. On the other hand, still some defensive jitters, and which I don't think Wataru Endo can solve entirely on his own when Trent and Konate and Alisson still act as if they only just met last week.
Yeah, I mean, Alisson, some of the passing, some of the mistakes made was just like unreal. Everybody can make mistakes. You can miss a pass. I don't know, some, like a brain freeze. Wait, okay, maybe. But it's just the way they've been defending all through the summer, even in pre-season, even some of those friendlies, was just shocking. And I thought it was shocking. And they will always score goals because they've got just so much talent. When you start with Gakpo, Szoboszlai, McAllister, and the front three of, you know, Darwin, Jota, Salah, Luis Diaz, whoever you want there, you will score goals all the time. But they will also concede all the time. And it's just, okay, this game, they won it. Could have been slightly different, maybe. They could have scored more goals, of course. They could have conceded more.
But McAllister could have not been sent off.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. If I'm Klopp, I'm like, okay, how do we solve all of this? And I'm looking forward to seeing Endo because he's a machine of running, recovering the ball, pressing, everything you want. But on his own, I don't know if he can really transform this team.
No. And McAllister now, obviously,
yeah,
going to be banned.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Big win for Juventus on Sunday against Udinese away in the first week of the Serie A season, Gab. This didn't look like a Max Allegri team, certainly for the first half. The second half, we went back to, hey, let's not attack.
No, and if you really want to nitpick, the first goal is, you know, a Chiesa hit in hope that gets deflected. The second goal is a generous penalty.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Don't look at that. Look at the fact that they camped out in the Udinese half and were 3-0 up at halftime.
True.
Now, Max Allegri or not, this is still City A, so at 3-0 up at halftime, the game is over and they're not going to score more goals because they don't want to be mean. That's just the mentality. No, this is the mentality, right?
Don't want to be mean. Okay, yeah.
I hope if you're Allegri, you realize, hey, look, when we tried to defend deeper in the second half, We played rubbish, okay? So take the first half as a positive. I think this is very encouraging. Shout out to Tim Weah. He came off injured. Hopefully he's going to be okay. I don't know what the latest is. Jude Bellingham scored two goals and served up an assist for Vinicius as Real Madrid won away to Almeria. Jules, it's a better start than Cristiano Ronaldo.
Better start than Karim Benzema as well. You know, Kareem the dream, of course. Incredible. I mean,
Jude the dude. How about that? Dude, there you go.
The performance overall, his performance overall was not great. As in the whole game, he scored two goals and an assist, which is great. The whole performance was not great.
Real Madrid's performance wasn't great.
Yeah, Almeria exactly. I'm just saying.
Almeria played well.
Yeah, yeah. But like, I think there's even more to come. He might not score two every game, but there might be more in his performances in a game than just popping up for two goals and that's it. Because that's pretty much, that was it. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I'll take that. But
I think there's more.
I think what they need to work on and what they are going to work on, I think they should persevere with this, is this the diamond in midfield with Jude at the top of the diamond. People say, oh, but Vinicius needs space to run into. He doesn't like being inside. Well, let's see if Vinicius can adapt. Give him every chance to adapt. You can always go back to the 4-3-3
There's
your fake right winger so Vinicius can run around as much as you want. But for now, if you're Vinicius, this can add another dimension to your game. And hopefully he sticks with it.
Yeah, I agree. Inter start the season with a 2-0 win over Monza, and Gab Lautaro Martinez has his game face on.
Absolutely. How about that? Two goals to start the season. I think obviously it's going to be huge for him in terms of responsibility this year with Dzeko gone and with Lukaku not returning. And I don't think there's going to be another twist there. Thuram showed some nice touches, still doesn't score, but, you know, whatever, that'll come. And you're encouraged. It was important for Inzaghi, and onwards and upwards if you're Lautaro.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jules, guess who's top of the Premier League and averaging 4 goals a game? That's right, Brighton, who put 4 past Wolves.
Yeah.
Jules, I know you want to talk about Kaoru Mitoma's wonder goal.
Yeah, I mean, that left-hand side is Tupinan, and Mitoma was just on fire. It's just so good. I don't know where his ceiling is. I don't know how far he can go, how high he can go.
Who, Mitoma or De Zerbi? Yeah.
No, Mitoma. I mean, Soli Zerbi, March? We know.
There's so many things to celebrate.
Soli March, come on. I think Soli March is at his level. However, Mitoma is just an incredible player, doing incredible things, as we saw in that game, as we saw a little bit, I guess, in the first game too. It's just the speed with which he does everything. So you can run fast, for example. Okay, you can run fast. There's a difference between running fast without the ball, running fast with the ball. There's also a difference by dribbling fast with the ball. Because you can run fast, push the ball, and then run behind, take another touch, push the ball, run behind. Good, we've seen players doing that a lot. But dribbling fast with the ball is a very different skill set. And for him to have those quick feet and run and dribble so fast with the ball is just incredible. And I know this is not new, but I just think he's going to get better.
If you haven't seen this, what's amazing is how close the ball stays for him. I mean, obviously, Kylian Mbappe can move really fast with the ball. But even then, it feels like there's more distance between, and I'm not going to go
to Mbappe's step, but
between him and the ball.
Exactly,
it's just that Mbappe's next step is so fast that then he moves the ball again and again. Here, the ball stays so close to him that even if you try to get it from him, you will probably foul him, assuming you can get to him. And he's strong, too. Mitoma is a strong, strong boy.
It's good. It's so, so good. So well done to De Zerbi. De Zerbi ball really in full flow. That was very impressive. Daniel Malen gets a late winner for Borussia Dortmund against Köln. Cab, not the best out of the campaign, although they got the win.
Yeah, but they were the worst team for most of the game.
Kobel had to make that big save on 0-0.
Weirdly, defensively, they were actually good. Yeah. It was just a big mess in the middle of the park. I think, obviously, you wonder how they spend the Bellingham money. You know, Bensebaini's going to help. Nemecha, I'm not so sure what the contribution is there. Sabitzer can't do what Bellingham does or did for them. Even Bellingham doesn't have a great season last year, but there's just a big drop-off. They have to figure this out. And I wonder, too, I don't think it's nailed on that they finish. I mean, I presume.
They would finish top four.
I don't think it's nailed on.
No?
Okay. I think the way Leverkusen are going, the way Leipzig look, Bayern still hanging around, it's a very thin margin. And you always have those pesky, annoying Freiburgs and Union Berlins getting in there. I don't think you want to take anything for granted.
No, maybe not. Maybe not.
Arguably game of the weekend in terms of entertainment, Jules.
Yeah.
Xabi Alonso's Bayer Leverkusen defeat Leipzig 3-2 in a rip-roaring clash.
That was very, very good. Yeah, I mean, from both Leipzig, obviously, starting with a defeat is never good. But that was a really good game all over. I thought we mentioned, I think last week, the Bayer Leverkusen recruitment, which was quite clever in the sense that, yes, they lost Moussa Diaby, for example. They went to get a bit of experience with Xhaka. They have power, strength going forwards. They're good defensively still, and you would expect that maybe now the first full season of Xabi Alonso, the second season for him, all the principles, everything would be in place. But that was very impressive. I think they will concede goals for sure because they are so attacking and they go forward and they will score goals as well. And for me, they're the biggest contender to compete with Bayern for the longest, more than Leipzig or Dortmund.
I think this is the year that Florian Wirtz can really consolidate and establish himself as a leader. This is the year he can make a step to the next level. And by the way, the body fast from Union, talk about Mr. Bump.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that is a presence and a half.
Yeah, definitely, man. After somehow scoring zero goals in Serie A last season, Andrea Belotti starts with two for Roma in the same game, though they are held at home by Salernitana. 2-2, Mourinho wasn't there, guy, because he's suspended, of course. But I'm guessing he's going to be grumpy anyway.
Yes, and who made him even grumpier? The Candyman. That's right. Antonio Candreva.
Two goals.
Lazio legend. Two goals. One of them. Techers, age 36. Yeah, yeah. Look, Roma, I think, still finding themselves. I think it's encouraging even psychologically for Andrea Belotti, the rooster, to get those goals in. They missed Tammy Abraham. They're still looking for solutions. We spoke about last year. We're not exactly on board with this Paredes-Renato Sanchez thing.
Paredes gave the assist on the second Belotti goal. You see, you rubbished him on Thursday. Here you go. Assist on his first game.
By the way, message to the Freakins. I said this last time, I'll say it again. Retire De Rossi's shirt.
I know, man.
There's no reason anybody should be wearing De Rossi's shirt who's not Daniele De Rossi.
Yeah, that's very true. That is very true.
This was way back on Friday, but Bayern rolled to a 4-0 away win against Werder Bremen with Harry Kane scoring his first goal for his new club. Everything okay then? Not concerned the fact that it was 1-0 until 20 minutes ago?
True. Yeah, true. And Werder Bremen had a terrible team, let's be honest. They were one of the worst teams away from home last season too. It was a few late goals that made sure of the win, so there's still a lot of work to do. I thought Kane was class, I have to be honest here. I thought he was class. He scored, he assisted, he played well because he linked up the play as well. And I thought for a debut, and again, I know it's Werder Bremen and they will be tougher games, but that was just perfect, especially after what happened against Leipzig in the Super Cup. So you take that, but you don't kid yourself. If you're Tuchel or Bayern or the fans or whoever, you know that there's a lot of work to be done because this is still not...
Yeah, this wasn't the test.
Yeah, exactly, for sure. Betis and Atletico Madrid battled to a scoreless draw, 0-0. Gab, were you expecting more than a single shot on target? Betis had 14 shots, none of them on target. I mean, come on.
I was psyched for this.
It should have been good.
No, but then, I flip on, I was watching on La Liga TV, and, the Bruno Bergerich or whatever, they have the sideline reporter, and it's 48 degrees Celsius. Beautiful. There's no point playing in an oven. Atleti were not good. They had a little flirt at the beginning. They had the one chance late in the game, the one shot on goal. Morata came on, looked a little bit livelier.
With a shirt like that,
but you can't
dislike that shirt so much from Atletico.
But
the blue and white.
I mean, by the way, this is. I'm sorry, I sense a rant coming on. It's like England playing in that weird blue shirt. Why can't they wear... Why do you have to play your second strip when there's no clash? It just really bugs me.
I agree.
It's just sales, right?
Yeah, for sure.
It's just sales. Why couldn't England have played that Women's World Cup final in a white shirt? right? In the England white shirt, the one with the lions, right? Lionesses and stuff.
Yeah.
Instead, that turdy blue thing, which they'll probably change it. They'll probably introduce a new one for the Euros, and like some other mug is going to go out there. And you know, I don't know. I'm sorry, but I guess I'm a traditionalist in on that front. Let's talk Messi.
Oh.
He won his first trophy with Inter Miami.
Yeah.
The League's Cup final against Nashville finished 1-1 and went to penalties. And
yeah.
I think he's surpassing expectations. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we mentioned this was the League's Cup. There will be obviously the League coming back, and there's a lot of work to do.
The League's Cup is the beginning of a Super League, yeah, right? Basically. It is. The top teams from Mexico, from La Liga MX, and from MLS combined, merging into one Super League.
Yeah, and they won that. He scored 10 goals in 7 matches, plus a few assists. Won the goal in the final. I mean, typically coming inside onto his left foot, curling in the top corner on the edge of the box kind of
something
goal.
We've never seen him do before.
Yeah, exactly. His 44th title, and you know, this might not be the most important for him. I don't know, I don't care. 44 titles is pretty impressive,
yeah. But it's counting Super Cups and ding dongs. The ones, that matter are league titles. Honestly, I can say this to everybody.
This one matters,
starting with
it
your
matters
friend
to him,
Jose Mourinho. The ones that matter are league titles, Champions League titles, and World Cups.
Right.
And he's won all of those.
Yeah.
So
this one matters
in a different context.
It still matters.
It matters in a different context because of the start, because he delivers silver. This is a last place team, delivers a lift.
Exactly.
But just DeAndre counting Yedlin, the numbers you're counting the Italian Super Cup.
It doesn't matter. It's 44 titles. He's got 44 medals or little trophies in his house.
Why don't you count the Gamper trophy
Good
too?
For him, because he doesn't get a replica trophy for that, I'm sure.
How do you know?
Medal.
I'm sure if Messi had asked for a replica trophy when he won the Gamper.
He didn't. But well done to him, taking MLS or the League's Cup by storm. It's very good for him. Sergino Dest has moved to PSV Eindhoven on loan. Barcelona are going to pay half his wages. There's a downside to it. There's a 10 million euros option to buy next summer gap. Is this where he can relaunch his career to start with? And for Barcelona, is this paving the way to sign Joao Cancelo or another fullback?
I mean,
you think so?
Look, as far as Sergino Dest is concerned, he had a nightmare last year. He had a tough time at Milan.
Yeah.
He needs to go somewhere where he can play, maybe going back home to Holland is the answer there. Again, the fact that Barcelona need to pay half of his salary just to send him away,
that's
not a great sign.
Not good, no.
Obviously, they'll save some money there. I think the priority, I think they'd be a much better team with Joao Cancelo. You know how I feel about Joao Cancelo, right? So I am Joao Cancelo's, maybe not his, outside of his family members, I am one of his biggest fans.
Yeah, I struggle a bit, but it's okay.
But they haven't registered Inigo Martinez and Marcos Alonso yet.
Yeah.
That's why they had to play De Jong in the back line at the weekend.
Yeah.
Like, they need to bring these guys that you are already paying and register them. That has to be the priority. I presume that the reason they did this, that this will help them do that.
I don't know how
many other players they can shift and offload. I hope they don't have to sacrifice one of their exciting young players. I hope Ansu Fati stays.
Yeah.
And if it means you can't sign Cancelo, let alone João Felix, who we'll get to later, then so be it.
Yeah.
You have to have a plan and you're sticking with it. But
no,
good for Dest.
Definitely.
It looks like Benjamin Pavard is finally moving on from Bayern. But is he what Inter need?
I mean, so let's start with Pavard. 1 year left on his contract. He's been saying for a month now to the Bayern Munich hierarchy that he doesn't want to stay anymore. He wanted to go to Manchester United. The problem was, unless they sell Maguire, they can't bring Pavard in. But he was really keen on going to United and to come to
England. I've heard this version of events. I'm pretty sure that out of Manchester United and Inter, the one team that has serious financial problems and is still under UEFA settlement agreement isn't Manchester United.
So that takes me to the Inter side of it, because that he wants to go to the Premier League and United,
sure.
Okay, no problem. The fact that they have to stream their squad before bringing him or any other players, I get it. Inter now, I didn't think that Inter could pay 30 million. So the first offer was 30 million plus 5 in bonuses. For someone like Pavard, you might have that money. Would you spend it on Benjamin Pavard?
No.
I wouldn't.
No.
To play what? A right back or right wing back or center back? Like,
right wing back is ridiculous. He's not going to play right wing back. He's going to be your third center back.
Okay. So again, you've got Matteo Darmian, who's not getting any younger. I get it. No problem. Is he much better than Darmian? Does he know the league? No. I have to say, I was very surprised by those links and the fact that he's quite clearly quite advanced, because I believe I was told yesterday Inter are going to make a second offer that should, I think, be enough to get him. So
okay. I don't understand this at all from the Inter side. I think from the Bayern side, maybe fine. But from the Inter side, to me, those numbers that you're telling me, Jules,
yeah,
it makes zero sense.
Completely agree. Let's keep talking about Bayern. Right backs, past and present, Gab, because Josip Stanisic has moved to Bayer Leverkusen on loan. Are you surprised, especially considering they're going to also lose potentially Pavard?
Yeah, so they go from having three right backs to having Mazraoui, who's in, who's out, and debatably a center back. That's okay, because they have all those tall center backs that you told me that they needed, right? Because we need Kim and Upamecano and De Ligt. Yes, we need 30 feet of center halves. I'm assuming that in the great man's mind now, he's got a plan B for right back. I like Stanisic. I think Stanisic is really good.
Yeah, he's a reliable player.
I think it'd be really disappointing if you shift him because you feel you can't get him playing time. I don't know what he's done to upset Tuchel.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's another one with a little Nagelsmann poster, in his room. Maybe when he has bed checks, he doesn't let them lock his room.
Oh.
And he found the little Nagelsmann shrine. I don't know. This is a tremendous signing by Leverkusen. You talked about Bayer Leverkusen, the biggest challenges to Bayern for the title. With Stanisic, I think this guy is an enormous upside.
I agree.
And I think Bayern need to tell me something. Is there somebody else who we're forgetting to play right back? Oh, I know who.
Who?
Bayern. The best right back on the Bayern team isn't even Mazraoui, is it?
Who is it?
Wouldn't it be the ultimate trolling of Joshua Kimmich? You go back to playing right back.
I didn't even
Joshua.
Think about it. Poor guy.
We're kidding. It won't happen. Even he wouldn't dare.
Yeah.
Two games, two defeats for Lyon as they fall at home to Montpellier. Jules, Laurent Blanc kind of predicted this, no? When he said, I might not even be there.
Is
he trying to get out? So, is this God punishing John Textor for being John Textor?
Well, maybe. By the way, there's a big meeting between Laurent Blanc and John Textor today, I believe, where I don't think they will sack him, but I don't know what will happen. If you count the preseason games, where Lyon lost the four games that they played, including the last one against Crystal Palace, is six defeats in a row now. I think they've scored three goals maybe in those six, something like that, in those six games. They've been terrible. They've been terrible all along in the way they play. Even if in the first game, it was not too bad, not completely bad, certainly the first half, but this game was terrible. They don't have any new players come in that actually could help the team.
Ainsley Maitland-Niles doesn't move the needle?
No. Blanc himself seems to be completely lost. I'm not even sure he wants to be there anymore because, for example, he's been asking for a number six since January. The club hasn't signed any.
Ainsley Maitland-Niles sees himself as a central midfielder.
Yeah,
you know that.
But not as a holding midfielder, I think.
Oh, wait, he sees himself as a number.
He's more of a box-to-box kind of player. I don't know. I know where they're going. Nowhere, that's for sure. I don't know if sacking Blanc would actually be the answer. I don't think so. There's just too many issues at the club right now. John Textor being one of them.
But I know we've been hard on him and the imaginary Pulisic offer and all this nonsense, right? But there's got to be a sporting director of football there. Is there somebody else who can go and take ownership?
Yeah.
Or?
So the new president of the club was not there. Didn't speak. The sporting director just arrived. He used to be a scout. It's really weird. So I don't know. I don't know really who is in charge, who does what. There's no communication from the club. Jean-Michel Aulas, can you imagine how much he must enjoy this, having been tweet, taking the mickey of Textor and Lyon and stuff like that. It's just gone crazy, drama, amazing.
I'm also going to guess, because, you know, France and Italy, you're our cousins just across
Of course,
the Alps.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. When you have a long-time owner/president who's there and who is popular because he's done a lot for the club, and he's pushed out, as you said, he can't help but snipe. I'm assuming the local media
massively
love Textor about as much as Zelensky loves Putin.
Yeah.
So poor Textor It sounds like he's got a comms problem as well and an image problem. Oh, and also, if you go against Blanc, you're going against, don't they call him the president?
Yeah.
Right? The World Cup. So it seems to me, John, this is an appeal to you.
Listen,
I think you
John.
Need to get your side of the story across. We will very happily host you here on Gab and Joe's Meets. I want to understand what on God's green earth you're doing, what you're trying to do with the club. Because tell you what, French media not listening to you. As you know, local fans not listening. It's not just about results. You've got everybody against them. We can be, hopefully, a friendly, fair and balanced place for you to explain what the heck you're trying to do. Because from the outside, it ain't working.
No, and like I said, got sent off as well. So not good. Really bad, bad, bad weekend. Joao Félix was not in the Atletico squad for the game against Betis. Barcelona vice president Rafa Yuste says that he's proud that a great player like Joao Félix wants to join Barca. Was everyone waiting for or expecting? Yeah.
They're waiting for Godot. It's a Samuel Beckett play.
Okay.
A character named Godot who never actually shows up because...
Okay. So you don't believe that Barca want to sign Joao Félix?
No, I believe it would be absolutely insane. It would make zero sense whatsoever. The only scenario, we're talking about this off air, is something where Barcelona sell Ansu Fati to Saudi for 100 bazillion. And then, oh, look, we need somebody else. Oh, Joao Félix on loan. And Uncle George gets paid on both ends by the Saudis, by Joao Félix. This makes no sense. By Atletico Madrid, by Barcelona.
Yeah,
This guy, Rafa Yuste, it sounds to me like he's somebody who's being polite, right? He's like, what's he going to say? Like, he seems to be like the classic rent. I don't know what he does at the club. Right? He seems like the rent-a-quote, right? Where he doesn't want to go and just laugh into his coffee. So he says like, well, it's an honor that a great player. And then he closes the door and he's like, ha, 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 Xavi, get a load of this one. Okay, it's not a knock on Joao Félix. But Joao Félix costs you a ton of money in salary.
Yeah.
It means more Mendes influence at the club, which I'm not sure Xavi, I'm not sure how Xavi feels about that.
Fair enough.
There's 101 reasons why do you even need him? I know Dembele's gone, but do you actually need him when, you know, Rafinha will be back from his suspension at some point, right? You've got Lamine Yamal.
Yeah.
You've got Gavi. You were playing the two, whatever. Yeah. No, what you need is a center forward to back up Lewandowski, for example, among the things that you could need, right? Yeah. So this, to me, makes zero sense. This campaign, I don't think, is endearing himself. Joao Félix is obviously not endearing himself to Atletico fans, the way he's talking.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what? I mean...
Because what happens, what happens if he doesn't move and by September 1st, he's still an Atletico player?
The transfer window in Saudi is open until the 20th.
Okay, so Saudi would be the only option.
Can I be super cynical? Super, super cynical about this. I think Uncle George is looking at this. Ooh, if I can move Ansu Fati. And again, I don't think Barcelona should Ansu Fati. I think Ansu Fati should stay where he is. But he's not getting the playing time, right? That's why we hear those other things. It's like, oh, look, if I can move Ansu Fati to Saudi and I can move Joao Félix to Barcelona, then that's two moves. If not, I'll just move Joao Félix to Saudi. And that's one move. And I get paid once rather than twice. The cynical reading is this. This guy's been a pawn for so long. I don't know. I don't even know that there's a way back with Atletico.
It's
I like to think El Cholo is a kind, forgiving man, and he's made it work for so long. But look at the players they have. They have Depay, they have Griezmann, they have Morata.
There's no
room for him there, right?
There's no space for him.
Loan to Wolves, if I were being cynical, but even that ship seems to have sailed. And it's even madder. Chelsea paid, was it like 7 million euros for a 6-month loan fee? Yeah, fool me once.
Yeah.
And not fooling him again.
Yeah.
Speaking of players left out of squads, what's up with my man Marco Verratti? Why doesn't mean Luis Enrique like him? And is he hoping to stay in Europe rather than join the Saudi exodus?
I think ideally he would like to stay in Europe and not go to Saudi, although he's got an agreement with a couple of Saudi clubs who made offers for PSG who want more money for him than the, I think, 30 or 35 million they were offered. I don't know. They feel like it's time for him to move on. And he's still by far the best player PSG have in midfield, technically, certainly. I think he could be perfect in a Luis Enrique team. But for some reason, whether that's something to do with Mbappe, whether it's something to do with his lack of fitness.
What, Mbappe doesn't like Verratti? Or?
I don't think they are best friends, no. I think there's a bit like for Neymar, I think there's a lot of the Verratti's life off the field that a lot of people don't like at the club. He's not the most professional player. He's never been. And now he's 30, Gab. So if you do it at 22, 23, 24, it's probably fine because your body can deal with it.
Are these the kind of things that you probably aren't able to do in Saudi?
yeah, potentially, yeah. Although smoking is obviously allowed in Saudi Arabia. But I do think that's probably the key. I would be sad if he goes. I think there's still probably a role for him in this current team if he stays. But right now, no, they don't want him to stay.
I was thinking of the Paris Saint-Germain midfield, right? And, you know, despite my love for Fabian, he's not been good. And you tell me Luis doesn't like him, right? No. Ugarte, fine. The guy who runs around, wins the ball.
Ugarte's been great.
It's a different position.
But yeah, doing that role.
The other guy he's been playing was Warren Zaïre-Emery. Scored a great goal, by the way. Unlucky to have been disallowed. But this guy, Warren's a kid,
he's 17,
right?
So he's a prodigy, I mean, but he's still young.
And you're telling me? And I suppose you have normal wingers, you've got Vitinha in midfield. Fine, doesn't get me excited.
No, I know.
But sorry, is there somebody I'm missing?
No. That's why they're looking to sign a creative midfielder that they need. I mean, Gabriel Veiga, at some point before going to Napoli. And again, this is my club, so they're going to go again for Colomwani today. So second offer for Colomwani is going in today, probably around the 70 plus 10. Which is a lot of money, considering you already had Gonzalo Ramos.
Yeah, what do you need Colomwani for? I suppose they'll move Ekitike then?
Yeah, Ekitike is going to move. Ideally, they would want to get rid of him. But still, you would have Gonzalo Ramos, Colomwani, Mbappe, Dembele, Lee, and Asensio. Okay, so six players. Okay, maybe. But then if you spend another 80 on Colomwani after spending the money on Dembele and Gonzalo Ramos, how much left do you have for your midfield? Because right now, the priority should be that midfield that you mentioned, not another number 9 or, you know, wide player, whatever you want to do with Colomwani. I don't know. We'll see. But I fear we don't see Verratti again in a PSG shirt. Tyler Adams has found a new home joining Bournemouth, who activated his £20 million release clause. Gab, is this the right place for him?
I think so. I was actually, I really liked Bournemouth's performance against Liverpool. I mean, it's a serious hodgepodge of players, some good, some just arrived.
Yeah.
But Iraola, I think, showed at Rayo that he can be a really good coach. I mean, it's, on some cases, people will turn up their nose and say, oh, well, he was playing, you know, he's going backwards, right? He's playing Champions League football with Leipzig. Then he goes to Leeds, who were supposed to be much better than they actually were, gets relegated, and now he's going to fight for, you know, a team that's likely going to be relegation contenders again.
Yeah.
What matters is that he plays, that he can establish himself as a leader. I think he made the right choice.
Me too.
I think there's some good people at that club.
Me too.
Thierry Henry has a new gig, Jules. Tell us about
it. Yes. Yeah, that's right, Gab. Today on Monday, when we record the show, there will be a big meeting at the French Federation to choose the new France Under 21 head coach, where the COMEX, which is like the exec committee?
EXCO, yes.
The EXCO of the French Federation puts a name forward, and then the Federation, the COMEX of the Federation, has to agree to it. And Thierry's name will be put forward, and they will accept it. He was apparently very impressive in the interview, where he beat Julien Stéphan, Sabri Lamouchi, and Jocelyn Gourvennec to the job, despite obviously the very difficult performances that he had before as a number one coach in Monaco and at Montreal. So we'll see. But yeah, I think he's quite excited to go into the Olympics, for example, and what would be a very talented 2002 generation for the French.
Well, I think what's also interesting here is, you know, we're going to talk later about Robbie Fowler, but seeing these guys who were legends on the pitch, who, you know, maybe have had bumpy rides as managers, but they keep going. Thierry Henry doesn't need money.
And no, that's need. He's taking a huge pay cut.
The huge pay cut from what?
From what he had, for example, at Monaco.
Oh, yeah, no. Not compared to what he's making now. Right now, presumably, he's making zero from coaching anyway, right?
Yeah, but for example, he has to give up CBS. He has to give up Amazon in France, being the big pundit on the French Ligue 1 games. Right. So you give that away.
So you're putting yourself out there for potentially more criticism. So exactly. Well done. Good luck, Thierry.
No, I agree. 10 days or so left in the transfer window, and Romelu Lukaku is still a Chelsea player, Gabby. Pochettino says he can't waste energy thinking about Lukaku. That's not very nice. And that the club had made the decision before he even arrived to not keep him. Where is he going to end?
I was surprised Pochettino went that far.
Me
too. Because it's years expecting. But this, to me, signals the fact that the club told him, he's probably telling the truth, said, like, look, whatever happens, Lukaku not back. He's not going to fight for Lukaku to bring him back. He's got other priorities. All I can say is the transfer window in Saudi is open.
Okay, sure. That's not going to happen.
I don't think he wants to go there, but they're still talking. I think the possibilities there probably won't be Al Hilal because, as we've seen, they've signed their center forward.
Yeah.
The guy's got to play somewhere.
It won't be, yeah. But what happens if he's still there? If he doesn't go to Saudi? Chelsea really not going to play? They're going to keep him on the books? He's going to be there trained but not play at all?
I would expect so, yeah. If Broja's fit or if they bring in another striker, yeah. And he'll move in January. I mean, I don't see another outlet. Everything else has been shut down or shot down.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I mean, people are really still suggesting, oh, maybe Juve, blah, blah, blah. If he takes a pay cut, maybe he can come and play with Vlahovic or alternative. You would want to do that makes no sense to me. So Ali Wahi is on his way to Lens for 35 million from Montpellier. Jules, are you surprised he didn't go someplace a little bit fancier? And how much does this move the needle for your boy, the Lens owner?
Yeah,
I'm sorry, forget his name.
Joseph Hugo-Orléans. Yeah, my bro Joseph. Replaced Luis Openda, who obviously went to Leipzig, as we know. They had other targets before. It's nothing to do with Wahi, but I think they didn't maybe want to spend that much, 35 million plus 5, which is the most expensive signing in the club's history, one of the highest in French football history outside of PSG, of course.
You're trying to think, what is more? I mean, what's more expensive than 35 million in France outside of Paris Saint-Germain?
Yeah, no, so Marseille's most expensive player ever is Vitinha, the Braga Vitinha, the striker, for 32 million.
Big Vitinha.
Yeah, big Vitinha. Lyon, highest transfer signing, I can't remember now on the top of my head. But yeah, no, we are amongst the biggest ever outside of the PSG one. So it's a huge investment in someone who's 21 years old, huge potential, who didn't want to go to Chelsea and sit on the bench or being loaned out to Strasbourg. Didn't want to go to West Ham either.
Interesting.
Who made a big offer.
So Chelsea looked at him because I would have thought
Chelsea offered money for him.
If I'm him, I say, wait, who's my competition at center forward? You know, Nico Jackson, who's my age and who pedigree wise, I can beat him for a starting job. I'm surprised he didn't. He says, oh no.
I think he was told that he was going to go to Strasbourg on loan anyway.
It was a stupid thing to tell him then. Yeah. Because now, knowing what we know now, he could have competed with...
I think so. I really think so. He's had issues before when he was at the Caen Academy with former girlfriends, you know, those kind of...
Right.
So I don't think he's a perfect human being, but nobody is. But football-wise, I think there's a wonderful time.
I know Milan looked at him as well.
Yeah.
But maybe a bit pricey.
And I think he wanted to play the Champions League, discover the Champions League with Lens. He's going to be a starter there. And there's potential for him to do really well again. And for Lens, who've started with two draws, a bit of a slow start like PSG so far, I think he can solve a lot of the scoring issues that they've had. So interesting. Ciro Immobile scores on the opening day for Lazio, but two late goals for Lecce means that they lose 2-1 in the opening game. And Gabmo Shosari is grumpy again. He doesn't think that it's a coincidence that Lazio's next three away games are against Napoli, Juventus, and Milan. That's a hell of a schedule, though, to be fair.
Yeah, you know what? There's a fine line between genius and folly, and Maurizio Sarri just comfortably straddles it. Hey, so he's unhappy with the transfers, blah, blah, fine, whatever, right? But then there's a conspiracy. This is effectively what he's saying. Like, oh, isn't it a strange coincidence that we have to play Napoli, Juve, Milan back-to-back? First of all, you're not playing them back-to-back because you got home games in between.
Yeah.
Secondly, they're all away. Guess what? Later, you can play them all at home. It's a freaking computer that puts it out. Are you saying the computer has some bias against that? Like, honestly, I love conspiracies because in Italy, some of them turned out to be true.
True, yeah.
This is not one of them.
Aww.
Just shut up. Just shut up and do what you're good at. Do what made you one of the best, most innovative coaches of your time.
That's true.
Go and coach a team.
That's true.
Arsenal kick off in a few hours against Crystal Palace. Jules, I don't understand the signing of David Raya. Do you?
So what? Why about having depth in the goalkeeping position?
Because
you have depth everywhere in the pitch.
Okay, because in the history of football, and maybe this is football speak and so on, it generally works best when there is a hierarchy, when there's a clear number one.
There's a clear number one here and a clear number two.
The number two is David Raya.
Yeah, on loan.
So it's on loan with an obligation to buy.
Yeah, but right? Still, right. Yeah. But if they really wanted him as a number one now, they could have signed him.
They have an
obligation
to buy, don't they?
I'm not sure. It's a 27 right. million obligation to buy.
Yeah, they're paying 3 million.
Yeah.
As a loan fee.
But yeah.
That's a lot of money.
He's still the number two now. Does that mean?
And they have the option to buy him.
Yeah, but listen, you could get the best of Ramsdale and Raya with that competition. It might not work out. We've seen clubs before, I'll give you that, that it didn't really work out. You've seen clubs who've alternated one for the Champions League, one for the league. I'm not saying that this is the answer.
And in the history of football, there have been very few clubs who've been successful doing that. I just think this is the move that you make if you are 1,000 million percent certain that this is not going to affect Aaron Ramsdale. That you have complete faith in your in Aaron Ramsdale's ability to cope with it and in your knowledge of Aaron Ramsdale. Because again, there's a reason why nobody does this. You just have to put your faith that they know what they're doing on this one with Ramsdale's personality. Because when they start playing off the back, Ramsdale miskicks a couple of balls. Oh, but David Raya, he's so good with a ball at his feet.
True.
And a build-up player.
So
whatever.
Turner is not good enough to be a number two at a club now, right? But so you go and get, you want to go and get a better player. You get an offer from Forrest that is better than what you've paid for Turner a year before.
They got no problem moving Matt Turner. He shouldn't be there, right?
So then why not going to get a really what? You were going to go and get like a rubbish second goalkeeper?
No, but you don't get somebody who can cast shade on. You either get an old second goalkeeper who's happy just playing FA Cup and who's a proven guy.
Yeah.
Or you get a youngster who's promising, but who's not David Raya, because David Raya's status is right up there with Aaron Ramsdale.
That would have been
all I'm saying is they're doing something which is unconventional.
Yeah. Let's see if it works. I mean, again, it's one of those where we see at the end of the season, he unsettled Ramsdale, didn't work, or he got the best out of Ramsdale, who was even better because maybe Raya was kind of pushing behind to get his place. You know, I don't know. We see. But right now, I don't see why you get a lot of depth and competition in every position on the pitch and not as a goalkeeper.
Because goalkeepers always have hierarchies since the beginning
of time. But there's one. Ramsdale is number one. Raya is number two right now. It's not. They're not on the same plane. Mm-hmm. Arteta is not going to say, I'm going to choose who is the best at training to get my number one. So let's see.
Yeah. Hopefully Ramsdale sees it that way too.
A group of United fans are demanding an apology from the club for what happened against Wolves at Old Trafford on opening day. Gab, was it how bad they were?
It should have been.
Yeah?
It really should have been.
So what is it then?
No, this is so stupid. And by the way, this is a small group of United fans. This is not, I would hope this does not reflect the majority of United fans. They're annoyed, and I think this is the usual anti-Glazer stuff, trying to make a buck. There's a show here in England called League of Their Own or something like that, which involves Jamie Redknapp and Micah Richards. And they did this little skit at halftime, which was filmed for the show, where they went out and they took penalties. And Richards was dressed in the Man City outfit and Redknapp was dressed in his Liverpool kit. And they took penalties against a goalkeeper and it was filmed for this TV show. Obviously, you've got the whole crowd at Old Trafford there. These people apparently felt offended. They felt they were being trolled.
What weird things to do, though?
What?
Why would you allow that to?
Because I'm sure, I would hope Sky, who were the rights holders, they paid for it. And, you know, every little helps when you're a Glazer. I don't know. It's pretty tone deaf and kind of weird.
Yeah.
I can see why people are annoyed, getting so annoyed that they're demanding an apology from the club.
Is that when Micah Richards lifted his shirt and underneath there was like a Balotelli tribute for that t-shirt he won for the 6-1 win of City and said, why Micah instead of me?
I didn't pay as close attention to this as you do.
I didn't know. I didn't know the context. Someone sent me a photo and I was
wondering why are they out there in there? Because, you know, it was, you saw it on television, it's been replayed. Why are they out there when they've got nothing to do with it? That was the reason why.
Okay. Wow,
but also, to be fair, there's not a knock on Jamie or Micah Richards at all.
No.
They spent time, they took pictures with the supporters, they visited the learning differences supporters, whatever. You know, it's not on them.
Yeah.
It's just weird. A little weird.
Yeah, definitely.
Kevin Nduram has apologized for some of his comments following Metz's 2-2 draw with Marseille. Jules, what did he say?
Yeah, really interesting comments at halftime. So, you know, in France, unlike in England in the Premier League, in France, you have a player who speaks at halftime. So before coming off the pitch, He does two questions to the to French TV. So very much in the heat of the moment. It's like a super flash interview at halftime. And Andorra, where Metz were not very good in that first half against Marseille, basically said, I don't know if I can use the word.
No, but I don't think you can. So
I'm not even sure exactly what the... I had to Google the translation because I didn't know how you said it in English. But basically, how would you...
We're playing like gay slurs.
Yes, gay slurs, exactly. That has to change for the second half or something like that.
Right.
And then not really realizing the mistake that he's made. Obviously, not acceptable. He apologized. He expected suspension. I mean, we expect a suspension from the league for those comments live on television, and rightly so. I don't know how long. I don't think we've had that incident, like a similar incident before, to be fair, in a French game like that live on television. It's just, come on. Kevin Andorra is a really smart guy too. And I know this is the heat of the moment. You've just finished the first half. You're frustrated because you haven't played well. Come on. Think before you talk. It's not
hard. I think there's a reality where there are certain norms where it was normal to talk that way, to use it as a euphemism for, you know, I don't, the word itself is obviously homophobic, but
yeah,
it's not, you're not so using it, you're basically, I suppose we're being too effeminate, we're being too weak or whatever. That was, it's just not acceptable in 2023 to talk that way. It's even less acceptable when you're a public figure speaking on camera. Let's hope it's a teachable moment. He understands
it. He's a young player.
And,
yeah,
so. You know, and it's obviously not acceptable even, you know, to use on the training ground.
Anyway.
Anywhere at all. So hopefully it sounds like he's apologized straight away and he realizes what happened.
I think so. Alexander Mitrovic has moved to Al Hilal from Fulham for £50 million. Gab, should we be expecting many more of those late moves considering the Saudi window is still open until September 20th?
I was thinking about this because I was talking to somebody who's had a hand in bringing players to Saudi. And he said, you know, people thought, oh, the Saudi league. He says, ultimately, it's four clubs that are smashing the really, really big club. I mean, Jordan Henderson is a bit of an outlier with Al Ittihad, not one of one of the big four, right? Mm. And the big four, obviously, Al Ahly, Al Nasser, Al Hilal, and Al Ittihad. He's like, they can only have 8 foreign players.
Yeah.
So
soon the quota will be reached.
Some point soon. And then if you want to play in the Saudi Pro League, yeah, sure. Maybe, you know, it's an opportunity for you to play against high-level opposition. It might be attractive for you. But you ain't going to be getting the paydays that these other guys have gotten. So I think it's definitely one to monitor. I wouldn't expect some of these teams. I haven't looked. But I would expect some of these teams to keep some slots open.
Yeah, definitely.
To see how things develop after after September 1st when the window closes here in Europe. Jules, not everybody who goes to Saudi Arabia does so for the big bucks. Robbie Fowler, who is in charge of Al Qadziya in the Saudi second division, tells the Times he's making less there than he did in his last gig, which was in India. And that nobody in England rates his experiences coaching in Thailand and Australia, and that he believes he deserves more respect. Do you sympathize?
I mean, to be honest, Gab, here, I don't know how well or not he's done in Thailand and India, in Australia. I don't know how well he's doing in the Saudi second division. I mean, it takes a brave man to go to Saudi second division, I guess, maybe because he had nothing else. I don't know if he's a good coach, so I can't... Yeah, of course, if he's good... and he would want to come to England and coach in England somewhere, or in Scotland, or I don't know, in Wales, in Ireland, whatever, then he should get a chance. But if maybe not getting any chances because maybe he's not that good,
I don't know. Maybe, but I love if it's true that he's not making significant amounts of money in the Saudi second division, where, you know, it's not exactly the spotlight, then good for him. He's coaching.
Yeah.
Doing what he does.
But I guess he's a coach, so he goes where he's got another...
Right, but he's also the guy they nicknamed God at Anfield, so he could also just sit around and, like, you know...
I'm sure he would rather work than being unemployed and not have a club, right?
Maybe a lot of ex-pros
fair enough. former Roma and Brescia boss, another club, Scarletto Mazzone, passed away over the weekend, Gab, and tributes poured in, including from Pep Guardiola, who wore a t-shirt in his honour. He was obviously his coach before. Gab, tell us about the great man.
So yeah, Pep Guardiola, of course, played at Brescia under Carletto Mazzone, where his teammates were people like Roberto Baggio, Luca Toni, Andrea Pirlo, and so on. It's pretty remarkable.
Pretty remarkable.
I never liked Mazzone. I didn't like his football. I didn't like he spoke in this Roman dialect, which I barely understood, and it just seemed very crass to me.
Yeah.
But I will defer to the number of people who said, like, what an incredible man he was, an incredible father figure he was. There's an incredible highlight of him when he's already very old in a game, in a vicious derby between Brescia and Atalanta, where Brescia score a last-minute equalizer, and he runs right under the stand with the Atalanta fans, so. And he's like ambling over there, and people trying to hold him back. A larger-than-life character is the one. Respect for somebody who gave so many years to the game, and respect to all these important people who really only had great things to say about him. I never understood him, but then I never worked for him. I always saw him from afar. Jules, that brings us to an end.
Wow.
I'm going to be back on Thursday. Yeah. You're going to be off because it's August.
Couple of days.
So join us then. And until then, love the game. Love you. Love yourself.